Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Education Buzz, the Harvard District 50 monthly podcast. And we have a very nice treat for you this month that we are here with MCC's president, Dr. Clint Gebhardt, who has been an incredible friend to Harvard in many ways. And we thought the opportunity to speak with him would shed light to members of our community and perhaps others out there that are trying to form partnerships with their local community college about how can these things work, because we feel blessed to have this partnership. So, Dr. Gebhardt, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Good to be here.
Your first podcast, is this? Have you been on a few?
It is. I'm an avid listener, but first-time participant.
I'm an avid listener, too, and I think I had the idea this summer that what if we would get some of the voices in our area talking about things that we think matter. And this came to me early on that there would be a good opportunity. And when some of the things, we've had some good news between Harvard and MCC recently. And so I thought, boy, now's the right time to talk about it. And so maybe that's a good place to start. We were both at the Harvard Chamber of Commerce annual banquet, and MCC was named the nonprofit of the year for Harvard. And I thought that was an incredibly thoughtful choice. I'm on the chamber, and I was not a part of that deliberation, but I thought it was a very thoughtful choice on their part, because Harvard has reached this nice connection with MCC, and it's really worked out well. And so talk about that award. I mean, that's probably not why you did it, of course, but it just kind of materialized. And when I really began to think about it, MCC has had a great influence on Harvard.
We were incredibly honored, Corey. When you go out and do good work, or at least what you believe is good work, and when you form collaborations, you never do it on the basis of that will be noticed. You do it on the basis of there's a need here. And I would say when it came to that award, part of the real thrill was that we have felt like Harvard has been leaning into us and we've been leaning into them, and to have somebody recognize that and say, this is a really good relationship. It touched us. We as a community college have lots of towns and communities that we're responding to, but Harvard has been a really rich relationship that predates before I got here, but has some exciting new things going on in it.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting thing, and maybe one of the things that our listeners would get out of this podcast is to maybe understand some of those things, because I don't think everyone appreciates or really truly knows all the things that that do have those relationships. MCC has had classes in Harvard for a number of times, just night classes and various things. There's been that connection for a long time. And that's one thing that maybe our listeners need to know about, is you don't just have to come to this campus, and we're here in your office and on your beautiful campus, but you don't just have to come here to be an MCC, to connect with MCC. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And you know, part of the whole community college system is based on the notion that folks sometimes are pretty place bound when it comes to pursuing higher ed. They have day jobs, they have families, they have commitments, and if they had to travel out of the county, it was going to be very difficult. Yeah. But even within the county, there are folks who rush from thing to thing. Two working parents, they get done, they throw some dinner on the table, and then they have children's activities or just even second jobs. And so the idea of bringing education closer and closer to where folks live is consistent with the community college model, but sometimes it's difficult. You have a certain economic model where you have to have so many people in order to be able to run a class. Right. And so we have had classes ongoing for years. In the community in Harvard. A couple of the really exciting things that have gotten me particularly looking forward to the future with our relationship with Harvard is understanding that at times it is the classes that we need to run. At other times, it is the preparation to become a college student that's so critical. And so when we started looking at some federal monies that are out there to particularly focus in on populations and communities, we looked at Harvard and said there are a lot of really, really bright students in our high school in Harvard mm-hmm. who don't have any sort of model for right. how to do college. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to open that door, create a lighted pathway for them, it's going to take some energy and right. focus. And so we pursued some federal monies through the TRIO program mm-hmm. specifically to focus on those really bright, energetic, incredible young people who just need some more attention to get ready to be college ready.
Right.
And so that program, which is called Upward Bound, mm-hmm. is really, to me, just such an exciting opportunity, as I'm sure you yes. think so, too.
Right. Well, just the enrichment of that. And I just ran into the Upward Bound director, Renee, in the hallway, and he told me about students that had been at a Hispanic leadership conference all weekend. They, you know, you think about a student's giving up a weekend voluntarily when they, you know, would probably, if on their own, be doing lots of kid-related things, but they went to a leadership conference from Friday to Sunday, mm-hmm. and that they just had incredible feedback about the experience. And so that, for these students, is truly can be a life-changing, I like your terminology, you know, the lighted pathway. We know that there are plenty of ways to get there, but sometimes that's a little obscure to someone that hasn't seen it or hasn't had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so this connection really makes it a little bit more obvious for our students. And it's not, as you said, it's not an ability thing. It's just, how do I get there? What's the pathway? And those are the real obstacles. And this mm-hmm. really has been helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try to look at, how is it that I knew I was going to college from a young age? Mm-hmm. Actually, both of my parents were not college attenders. So I was, I am officially a first generation college student. Okay. And yet, from the time I can remember being in school, sitting in a classroom, I somehow knew I was going to college.
Right.
They had somehow transmitted that to me, mm-hmm. not through words, but just through an expectation.
Yeah.
Had I not had that, it might have been a difficult thing for me to imagine myself as a college
right.
student. And so when you have students whose parents have never had that as a part of their experience or their parents' experience, I've heard several students say, well, my parents want me to go to college. They just have no clue as to how that
right.
happens.
Right.
And it's not just a financial barrier. It's an expectation that what you do in your freshman year is going to impact
right.
your application to college. And so those early decisions, and that's where Upward Bound is so exciting, because they're getting into the classroom but outside the classroom with these students and saying mm-hmm. college is a dream that starts now.
Right.
It doesn't start the second yep. half of your senior year.
Right.
So the going to a conference like that, and actually those students had that conference paid for only through attending a leadership series on our campus for, it seems like it was 10 weeks, where they were giving up time on Fridays to do a long, pretty complex leadership seminar. And based on their completion of that, then they got funding to go to Chicago.
Yeah. And so that's, I guess, the two-way commitment that kind of comes, is the commitment MCC has made. But the students then have to kind of meet you halfway a little bit. And that's mm-hmm. where I find them rising to meet the expectation set. That's one of my core beliefs, that people generally rise the expectations. And so not knowing that there's anything other than that, students are like, oh, so I show up on Friday and do this? Sure. And they just fall into line saying this is the way it ought to go. And so
absolutely.
Those aren't opportunities that would be present just without that partnership. And that's, I think, what's unique, and some of the things that the Chamber of Commerce recognize, that this is really a unique partnership.
Well, and part of it is our own sort of looking in the mirror and saying we can't expect students to come here and be college ready without giving them a sense of how you college. I've started using college as a verb, because it's a series of things that you have to learn how to do.
Yeah.
And to think that it's straightforward mm-hmm. or obvious is just was really, I think, haughty on our part. And so we started an MCC 101 class mm-hmm. that is simply about learning how to college and understanding our sometimes clunky and complex systems. And so recently, recently, well, a month or two ago, I came over on a Saturday here, and the Harvard MCC 101 class was on campus. Mm-hmm. And so this is, again, a group of students or prospective students who we're taking through a, here are the basics of how you're going to do MCC should you choose to come here. So came over, it was a Saturday, and they were getting a big tour of our campus. And I met with them over in our Student Success Center just mm-hmm. because I wanted to thank them for coming over.
Yeah.
And it was it was astonishing when I started talking to these folks and saying, so what are you thinking about doing when you come to MCC?
Right.
Electrical engineer, pre-medicine, wow. right? Wow. I want to be an educator. Mm-hmm. I want to be an early child educator. Every one of these women and men, young women and men, had dreams already. They were right. formulated in part because they were sitting in this classroom, had been for weeks, and being taught that, you know, develop a dream. You know, you yeah. may change that in the middle, but start thinking right sure. now about what you want to do. And to me, that's so exciting to hear.
Well, and I think that is even generational change that is occurring. And that's yep. what is so exciting about this on the idea. And it was just kind of a brainstorm between Chris Gray and I one time. Is like, what if we did MCC 101 in Harvard? It just kind of brought it out. In that first group, we had people in their 40s, mm-hmm. people right out of high school. We had this just wild collection, and they all found their niche through the campus visits mm-hmm. or understanding. And there's just so much to understand, you know, the financial aspects of it. How am I going to afford this? What am I interested in? And for some of our students, it was as simple as, like, how do I get there? Mm-hmm. And so they were just so flexible. And I guess that's one of the things I have just immense respect for, the problem solving that generates from your leadership team here, is saying, we're going to solve these problems. These are mm-hmm. these aren't the problems that are going to keep mm-hmm. you out of college. We'll get you there. Let us just, but you got to talk to us, and we have to create a venue where we can understand what it is mm-hmm. that your needs are.
It's interesting, Corey. We came to believe that we had a front door problem, in that literally there were folks who would walk in our front door and just get sort of overwhelmed with, which office do I walk sure. into, and right. what am I going to do first yeah, there, right. and would turn around and walk back out the door. Yeah. And you talk about a painful loss, somebody sure. who didn't even talk to somebody yeah. but felt so overwhelmed. And so we invested in a little welcome center out at our front door specifically so that a person doesn't walk 50 feet yeah. before somebody says, right. hello, right. can I help you?
right.
And those investments aren't cheap because you have to fund somebody to sit out there.
Sure.
But they are essential to keep from having that kind of painful leakage occur yeah. where somebody who doesn't even get to start their dream yeah. Because we look intimidating.
Yeah.
I think one of the exciting things about Harvard is that I haven't looked at the demographics from an actual number standpoint, but I believe that there are a bunch of Latinx students who are here who might not otherwise be. I was in a Meet the President luncheon in our Success Center last week. And it was far and away the most diverse group of students that I've ever seen in one place.
Right.
And I fully believe that that is in part connected to some of our diverse students right. believing that this yep. is a home where they can feel comfortable.
And that's one of the things that is really a value of our community, that we really appreciate that diversity. And we keep reminding people that that is the strength. And we just did some testing on some of our eighth graders and discovered that a good number of them were already showing Spanish proficiency, the level where they could earn that seal of biliteracy
wow.
as eighth graders on the Spanish side.
Wow.
And some of those were native English speakers.
Wow.
So we feel like we're developing some students that are ready to choose MCC or other things. And what's great about it, I think the Upward Bound grant, is it fits so well with our AVID program. We are definitely an AVID district mm-hmm. saying, okay, we are going to prepare you. We're not quite sure if you know yet what you're going to be, but we're going to give you experiences that will be post-secondary ready, whether it's some type of trade and vocational thing that MCC is a great partner for. Maybe it's a 2-year before going to 4-year military, whatever. But there's opportunities here for you, and we're going to prepare you so that you have those choices. You're not Forced, this is my only option because I didn't get a good preparation through that. And that's right. What Upward Bound and Avid and those things that we're mm-hmm. trying to do now, allow our kids to see this. And there is certainly an obvious presence of MCC now in the hallways. You see MCC t-shirts. Mm-hmm. You see these things. That's and great. That's what is encouraging is that mm-hmm. it's not this foreign and scary place anymore. Mm-hmm.
Well, and Corey, please take credit for being an open and receptive partner, because I believe that one of the trends that's going to happen in the next, definitely in the next decade, is a blurring of the lines between K-12 and higher ed. You're already seeing that mm-hmm. with the number of dual credit offerings right. In the high school. And the idea that these were distinct entities, mm-hmm. that you completed one and then you chose another right. and you started another, was just really not effective yeah. in helping students often pursue and complete a college dream.
Yeah.
But in order for that to happen, your schools have to have an open door and an open mind and right. be collaborative in spirit to say, mm-hmm. we want to figure out how college credits can yeah. get offered in our school. And if our teachers need some certifications, or if they need to accomplish certain things to be yeah. able to do that, we're going to support them in doing
right.
that.
And I think everyone in the county has been really encouraged by kind of the Woodstock had the idea of kind of starting that, and they've kind of begun, you know, that those discussion how do students do that simultaneously mm-hmm. or in their mm-hmm. associates and their high school, which for some of us that are of the traditional approach that, you know, you don't blur those lines. What are you talking? Mm-hmm. You got to wait till you're mm-hmm. Graduate to start mm-hmm. that. That's really an encouraging idea, because we know that the success our students are having these dual language or these dual credit classes, they're ready. Mm-hmm. They can do that. And it's only through the willingness on both sides to say, you know, let's meet the kids' needs first, not worry mm-hmm. about adult things, because yep. I think the adults sometimes are where the problem lies.
Absolutely. And you know, we have our own work to do to get our faculty completely comfortable with this.
Of course.
It reminds me of when online learning was introduced and faculty yeah. said, how in the world can a student learn online?
Yeah.
And frankly, I had the same sentiment, because some of my most motivational, inspirational moments were absolutely about sitting in a classroom. I can remember sure. what the room smelled like. I can remember sure. what it felt like when yeah. somebody inspired me mm-hmm. and shared something with me that made me want to learn forever. So
right.
I can become very sentimental very quickly
yeah.
about
yep.
The classroom. And yet it came, and we begrudgingly began to do it. And what we learned is that students learn through online learning
yeah.
and that the connection that you make to your instructor can be very real mm-hmm. in this new online learning
sure.
world that we right. live in. And so we've made that adjustment. Now, beginning to take college into the high school is at times pressing us as well, because it's easy to think, well, that mind isn't sort of stretchable enough to sort mm-hmm. of take on all this content.
Sure.
And these are complex thoughts
yep.
for a 15 or 16 mm-hmm. year old to be, taking on. That's just a hump for us to get over.
Sure.
You know, we got to get over ourselves and realize that learning is going to increasingly happen across the spectrum of age
right.
and in different environments. And if we're flexible, some really cool outcomes
right.
are going to happen.
Well, it allows for so much personalization, too, that they mm-hmm. can follow things that challenge them intellectually or topically. They can find that challenge, that personalization that is meaningful, because some of our students that we find disinterested perhaps at a certain point, it's just because we haven't been able to capture them intellectually mm-hmm. on something that they felt engaged in
mm-hmm.
and something enjoyable. And that's what the partnership with MCC allows us to do, is say, well, what if we could tell you that you have this opportunity through that? And they're like, well, wait, why? I don't have to graduate in 2 years. And then,
mm-hmm.
so helping them see that has been really something
mm-hmm.
good. I want to change topics, though, because as we sit here on campus, you can't help but notice, as you've been on campus over the last 2 or 3 years, just, I don't know if the beautification is the right word of the campus, as you mm-hmm. drive by Highway 14, the front sign on the back side of the campus, the new Science Center. This campus has undergone a transformation in the last 4 or 5 years that is really noticeable and visible to our community. And maybe for those that haven't noticed that, talk about your facility here, because it's really mm-hmm. inspiring to mm-hmm. those of us that are looking at facilities ourselves right now.
Oh, that's great. And I appreciate you noticing,
yeah.
Corey. when I came here, I would say it's safe to say that our board was embroiled in an ambitious plan to completely change our campus. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that plan had really mushroomed to a just under $50 million project when it had swollen to the place where folks were just stuck because we're not a community who has been able to avoid the pain of our taxes.
Sure.
And for folks to try to imagine taking on a nearly $50 million project was just very, very hard.
Yeah.
So what we did when we were able to break that log jam was to start picking a few small logs mm-hmm. and pulling them out and saying, what do we really need more than anything else?
Right.
What's important? And what emerged was that the sciences were being trained and that lab work was being done in really just not just antiquated, but even unsafe conditions.
Right.
And so we pulled that out and said, what if we were to focus just on a science center?
Right.
And what if we even weren't going to build offices for people in that science center? I mean, make it completely about learning mm-hmm. and labs, and our science faculty would still walk from their current offices over. And whenever we were able to do that, suddenly our board got their head around that,
uh-huh.
and we were able to go out and seek donor funding so that we wouldn't have to bring a levy to our community to try to support. And so really that log being pulled out mm-hmm. has led to what you see today in that we built the Science Center. It is a state-of-the-art, incredible, it's a beautiful center,
gorgeous,
but the best kind of learning conditions for our sciences. And really, it's not just for folks majoring in science. Just mm-hmm. about everybody's going to take some kind of science class while they're here.
Sure.
And so they get to appreciate that and enjoy that as well. But as soon as we pulled that out, then suddenly we had some old, decrepit classrooms, Science Center labs that were still great spaces. They just couldn't really be used for that purpose.
Right.
So then we went and found some donor funding to reimagine our space in terms of what do students need most? What does the campus need most? And found a donor who really saw that vision and allowed us to add a bunch of new sitting spaces, mm-hmm. just hangout spaces for students, because when they come on campus, they're coming here to do their work and then they leave, but they have gaps in between there, and we really didn't have great places for them to hang out. So we were able to rehabilitate those spaces to mm-hmm. make them more student-friendly. We were able to add some exciting interactive classrooms. We added a little conference center for when we bring people on campus.
Yeah.
And so all of those vacated science center or those science labs and classrooms have really become remarkable space. And you almost hear people talk about that more than our science center.
Right.
They love the science center, but when they walk in, they say, this place has a different feeling. It feels more conducive to students being here.
So because we're discussing some similar things in Harvard right now, after the science center was pretty much understood to be done and funding was secured and people could start to see that vision, were there some more donors that appeared that said, you know, I want to be a part of that. Maybe I didn't believe it was going to happen. Or then you got some energy and enthusiasm. We have this hashtag that I've been preaching, Harvard Rising, that I just keep pounding because we are seeing some of that same enthusiasm and just these little bits of enthusiasm and momentum grow. And I wonder if you kind of capitalized on some of that came really through that broken log jam that allowed the Science Center to be created that allowed the rest of the campus to follow along. Because it's like painting one room in your house, right? You're like, well, you start looking around. Wow, maybe I got to do that place too, right?
That's a great analogy. So, yes, there was follow-on money that came. The board approved simply a Science Center and not touching all of those vacated spaces. We were just going to leave them empty. But once they saw the excitement of the Science Center, there were beginnings of folks saying, well, we can't just leave these empty.
Sure.
This is this is a silly sort of waste of our space.
Right.
It made that next phase much more conceivable. And then I would say that what's happened after that and the construction that is currently ongoing and what you're about to see here in the next month is a complete redress of our front entrance in terms of all the essential things that students need to be able to get done to be a student.
Right.
So advising, registration, financial aid. We're getting ready to gut the front entrance to all of those spaces and make them more user-friendly.
Right.
Again, the idea that when you walk in, you should know exactly where to go. Mm-hmm. If you have a disability and you need services to get accommodations to be more successful,
right.
You need to know exactly where to go to register. And those lines need to be better at accommodating you. We never again want to see a line halfway down the hallway because our space was just bad space for
right.
them. And
right.
so that change, again, was way easier to get support from because folks were seeing, okay, the nature of this place is changing physically and it creates a better environment to just want to come in.
Right. One thing that I think might be fascinating to people listening is just who is an MCC student anymore? I think there is a stereotype in our mind. This is someone just right out of high school and someone that just jumped right into that and felt like MCC locally was the right way for them for whatever reason. But as I walked in today, I'm noticing a lot of variety of ages and interests and just the hallways lined with opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to define who a student is here anymore, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And in fact, when we sit around in cabinet meetings and talk about our student, and I could put that in mm-hmm, air quotes, mm-hmm. We have to remind ourselves frequently, well, who are those folks?
Right.
Because they're not 18, 19, and 20. We include those mm-hmm. those folks. But our Harvard kids who are taking classes yeah. at the high school and getting college credit, there are kids, there are mm-hmm. students.
Right.
The kids in college that will come here this summer, there are students, as well as the 30 and 40-year-old people who have been forced into second yep. careers or
right.
who have just said, I want something more mm-hmm. and are coming to the college.
Right.
I was at a leadership, a creative leadership management class in the evenings. I'm trying to get out to more classes and just sit in and
yeah.
more or less soak in our core delivery
yeah, right,
system,
sure.
what we do, and was immediately struck by the just the heterogeneity of that classroom.
Yeah.
There were women who clearly were at the end of raising their families and who were saying, I want more.
Mm-hmm.
There were 18-year-olds who clearly, this one guy, he had to be playing basketball. I mean, his size mm-hmm. just dictated that he must have been a basketball player. Everything in between.
Yeah.
And so you look at that classroom and saying, what are we doing? You know, we're offering the same thing, but to people in various stages of life who have very different needs.
Right.
And that's what makes this place exciting.
And if you're kind of an educational junkie or a true believer like both of us are, it kind of warms your heart to know that you can create something that is that versatile. And that's
mm-hmm.
what we try to say about our school district right now, that we're trying to create a space where you decide what you like and where your gifts lie.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the variety to kind of honor that and take you as far as we can in that until it's time to kick you out because you've graduated and
yeah.
find those skills and those interests and those passions
yeah.
and then allow a place like MCC to really take them to where it's a professionally marketable degree or
yeah.
experience or certificate.
Yeah. Well, and I think, Corey, you've hit your, you know, you started this podcast by asking about the award, and the award's a really nice thing, but I think you hit the nail on the head when you said this is one education junkie to another.
Yep.
You believe that education changes lives forever, and it is an economic change,
yeah.
And it is a philosophical change. Can be a spiritual change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, education changes the vectors of people's lives and their
yeah.
families' lives forever. And when, you know, one entity, Harvard Schools and the Harvard community mm-hmm. has that passion and they meet
yeah.
up with another college who has a similar passion, you can't help but have creative and exciting things happen.
Sure. So in looking towards the future, you've mentioned some of the redesign and the front entrance. Are there other MCC initiatives that will be on the horizon that we can look forward to?
Yes, we just had a new degree approved last month and two certificates, both in what we're calling entrepreneurial agriculture.
Wow, nice.
When you think about the future of agriculture, it is likely to get smaller from a scale of, mm-hmm. of size than what you think about in terms of the corporate farm.
Right.
But there's a tremendous opportunity because we sit on some really good land and we sit as a collar county to the city of Chicago.
Sure.
And if you've been there recently, they still have restaurants there.
Good one.
And they open one every hour.
Right.
And the opportunity to grow and find a way to economically scale things, to provide for your mm-hmm. family and create a business model is just something that is very exciting mm-hmm. for our county.
Well,
we have land. We have a huge mouth to feed in Chicago, mm-hmm. as well as locally. Mm-hmm. We have folks who are going to want to eat locally.
Sure.
And know that what's how their vegetables or their proteins are being grown right. Are sustainable, that are eco-friendly. And so this degree combines something. It is really the only degree that we know of, definitely in the state, and maybe in the country, for a community college to be combining business skills with growing skills right off the bat.
Sure.
So this is a two-year
well,
degree
exciting.
Where you learn marketing, basic business modeling, right alongside of learning how to grow a plant and how to deal with plant diseases.
Well, and the culinary program has been one of the pride program mm-hmm. of the college for many years.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some good meals down there, and then
yep.
supplying fresh produce to,
mm-hmm.
I believe it's called the Tartan Cafe, right?
Yeah, Tartan Bistro.
Bistro,
which is,
yes.
I think already filled up. I think they take they run a restaurant all
yeah.
spring and let our students sort of do the yeah. entire restaurant, and yeah, they do a great thing. But yeah, the opportunity to connect that to
yeah.
culinary is great. Honestly, Corey, we imagine. So these students are going to learn about wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to learn, you know, if you wanted to take, you know, a quarter of an acre of carrots, because you tend to not want to grow 15 things. You want to grow
sure.
a few things well.
Right.
How would you become the carrot provider
yeah.
To Harvard School District?
Sure.
And so we hope to develop some great little models where we take on opportunity to work with a local entity
yeah.
and provide them at wholesale the vegetables so that students can learn how to do that.
It's maybe a good just example of how the college is kind of weaving itself into the needs of our county, because it is a mm-hmm. county thing, and you can imagine mm-hmm. all those connections that are to be made. And
yep.
That's just fun. I mean, there also is this idea of a business incubator county program that'll be here. So it is fun how MCC has kind of woven its way into the fabric of what our county expects.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, too, if you mentioned Illinois, maybe the only program that agri-science kind of program you mentioned, but talk about the Illinois system, because it would seem to me that various community colleges like MCC, they all have different flavors, don't they? There are
mm-hmm.
just so many different things. What makes MCC stand out from other colleges, community colleges in our
mm-hmm.
state? Because how many are there even? I mean, there's
36?
Yeah.
30,
and serving,
like
you know,
yeah.
hundreds of thousands of
mm-hmm.
people, not just, you mm-hmm. wouldn't say students, because they're of all ages. But
mm-hmm.
what makes MCC stand out? What
yeah.
makes MCC so special? Because there does feel to be a lot of enthusiasm here right now.
Yeah. And, you know, when I get asked that question, Corey, sometimes my first impulse is to almost flip that question around, because I'm a fairly late comer to the community college system.
Mm-hmm.
My first career was in colleges and universities, both at Notre Dame and
mm-hmm.
Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still at this romantic infatuation stage with community colleges,
sure.
because this model of serving your local community with what they need is – it's just amazing. And the 1,500, 1,800 community colleges across the country do this so well.
Yeah.
And the way they do it is to adapt and form themselves to the community's needs.
Right.
So we have some things that we do different here. This program is going to be, you know, unlike any
mm-hmm.
other. But it's simply that we sort of look out to our community and say, what do they need? You know,
yeah.
what do we have here? We
right.
have farmers. We have farm kids.
Right.
We have kids who, you know, want to do something, and they wonder what's the natural resource here that they're going to use. Manufacturing will be another area
mm-hmm.
where we are
yep.
Doing some really cool things, especially with work-based learning, where we're getting students into the work setting more quickly, so that they see what they're doing and then come back and learn. And the learning is a little bit less, amorphous or just disconnected from the work experience. But in that sense, I think a bunch of our sister colleges are doing the exact same thing. So if corporate agriculture, if big ag is a big deal south, in Illinois, then there are great programs that are featuring how to do, how to do big rig driving and how to work on large machinery.
Yeah.
And so I think what we're just doing is saying we're going to do what the community gives us. If we see a community like Harvard that has rich, rich potential of students who will go unmined unless we support what you're already doing, that's where we jump in.
And I
think we're doing some things really well,
but
I think we're just doing what we're supposed to do as a community college.
A really good answer to that, because it is a unique position. And just the more I learn about all the things going on, the more impressed you have to be just about the partnerships and that degree of service. And one of the things in leadership circles, we talk about servant leadership, and it feels like MCC does feel like, hey, we're trying to serve the needs of this community. It's pretty exciting to watch the fruits of the labor.
One fun example, I just got the numbers that over 2 years, we have saved students $5 million in books. There have been 50,000 incidents of students purchasing books, one or more books, and in each case, saving about $100 a book, which rolls up to $5 million, nearly $5 million, by taking books online, by sort of getting away from this really, I think, just a bad model of buying this big textbook at $150, $200 a pop that you use for one semester, and then you try to sell it, and sometimes you can sell it for a fraction of the cost.
I have a college sophomore who's experiencing that pain right now.
There you go. So we are taking these books, and we are developing free or almost free online resources that mirror the content of the books. And not just mirror, but most of our instructors are saying, I'm getting better teaching materials out of online books that cost the student nothing. That has dipped into our profits from our bookstore significantly. And early on, I said to our chief finance officer, prepare to start losing money on our bookstore because we are going to take ourselves out of the book business. And we have done an amazing job of nearly pulling that off. We're not there yet, but for instance, our general psych course just took their books completely online. $200,000 a year students are going to save just from that one
just
text
that one
alone.
Course. Incredible. Yeah. Well, I think if I could maybe distill that down a little, what you've prioritized is the learning, not the schooling. And I think that's what I try to remind our folks here, is that what we in essence should be about is how to create learning opportunities, not the school and the traditional structures that are nostalgic and important to us all in some way. But when we can talk about, is it good for learning? That's really what makes. Well,
that's great.
This has been a great opportunity. I think we'll wrap it up, and I hope you'll share this with your daughter. She'll be proud of you for being a podcast star now, and we can maybe hook up and do this again sometime.
She enjoys Pop Culture Hour, I think, more than she'll ever enjoy this.
Well, I don't know if we're quite pop culture, but for the education junkies, and that's why we call this Education Buzz in reference to our Harvard Hornets. But truly, we hope this is something that any educator could listen to and find maybe some nuggets within our
Corey,
conversation.
Thanks for inviting me. And again, let me just publicly say thanks for what you do in terms of helping us collaborate better. It means a lot to us.
Right. Well, I'm proud to be now on the MCC Foundation Board.
That's right.
That's something that I'm a proud believer in the work.
We need
here.
Money.
Yes. I'm working with my friend Carlos on our summer golf event.
That's great.
I'll be talking to maybe some of you listening now about joining me for the golf event. So it's great. Well, thanks for your time, Dr. Gabbert. It's a pleasure to be with you here, and I value the partnership greatly.
Me too.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Education Buzz.